from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny.
Foot, tomato, shoots, he scores! He scores!
Dan Rozanowski has been the radio voice of the San Jose Sharks for nearly three decades, since the team's first game. Coming up on Forum, we talk to him about his new book, An Insider's History of the Sharks, and we'll find out why he thinks San Jose can win it all this year. Welcome to this morning's Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. As the voice of the San Jose Sharks, Dan Rozanowski has seen the team's ups and downs and everything in between. His book, If These Walls Could Talk, gives us an insider's look at Sharks history from the team's inception in 1991 to its trip to the Stanley Cup Final in 2016 to the present day. Here he is calling the Joe Thornton's hat trick from a few weeks ago.
Pavelski feeds to Burns in deep. Oh, centering feed behind. Two players that were open on the left wing side. One of them was Joe Thornton. Pavelski back for Thornton. He's across the line. Shoots. He scores! The hat trick for Joe Thornton. And he puts the Sharks in front 5-4. And SAP Center explodes in excitement.
Well, Dan Rozanowski will be joining us shortly. At least I hope he will be. And we do want to hear from you. You can tell us what your favorite moment in Sharks history is. And you can do that by calling us right now at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Or post your comment on our website, kqed.org/forum, or on Facebook, or tweet us at KQED Forum, or email us, forum@kqed.org. And we're going to do something, I think, unprecedented here. We're going to go to our engineer, Danny Bringer, who is a major Sharks fan and who's been, well, advising and counseling me on things. What is your favorite moment
I'm so
moment
excited
in
about
history?
This. You know what? My favorite moment is probably, I'm not sure exactly the year, but it was the first time the San Jose Sharks were in the playoffs and they beat the Detroit Red Wings. That was just incredible. Unbelievable moment. And I'm sure that's in the book.
What was unbelievable about it?
It just, they were not favored to even, you know, be in the playoffs, and they made it to the playoffs, and then they beat Detroit, and it was, and Detroit was like a powerhouse, so it was awesome. I'm sure that's in the book, too.
Yeah, why do you love this team? Because it doesn't get a lot of credibility in the Bay Area as other teams do. At least that's the complaint I hear.
Yeah, but the fans of the San Jose Sharks are unbelievable. They're just so diehard. And like I said, I've been a fan ever since the Sharks started. And the fans in San Jose are unbelievable. If you've ever been to a hockey game, it's crazy. It's exciting. And there's nobody better than Dan to call the Sharks. It's a lot of fun.
And the prospects this year?
You know, it would be amazing if we could bring a Stanley Cup to San Jose. It would just, I mean, it is the most unbelievable trophy in all of sports. And to see the players carrying the Stanley Cup, and handing it off to each other as they go once they win is just a thrilling thing. And I tell you, if they win,
it'll be
amazing.
Same thing with a Super Bowl win. You know, they hold it up like it's a Torah.
It is amazing, though. Really amazing. So,
well, Danny, we will talk to you again maybe about something as the years go by.
But yeah,
this is your maiden journey behind a microphone, and I congratulate you on this.
Oh, thanks.
And I know what a steadfast fan you are of the
Absolutely.
Sharks. And Rozanowski has made it here, I'm glad to say. Would you have traffic problems?
Well, it happens all the time, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah, it happens to me all the time, but I'm glad you're here.
What we've just experienced, by the way, for those listening in, is exactly what happens to a play-by-play broadcaster every single day of his life. And that is expect the unexpected.
Yes, but broadcasters always have to plan way ahead of time. That's my wisdom for the day. Not only broadcasters, but everybody else, especially with traffic in the Bay Area, because it is so difficult and has become so impossible. Anyway, I'm glad you're here.
I appreciate it.
And let's begin by talking about the Sharks with you, but particularly about the Sharks from your perspective, having been the only announcer, the sole announcer in its history. How'd you come by that? You were a Connecticut kid.
I was. I grew up in the state of Connecticut, and I grew up following and loving the sport of hockey and also loving the art of performance. When I was a youngster, I was in a lot of plays. I was in a few musicals. I played Captain Hook and Peter Pan. and a number of other things. So I had a great love of being in front of people and performing, and I enjoyed that.
Well, we shared that, and you've done over 2,000 broadcasts, right?
That's right. Yeah. And so I started playing the game, too. But the difference was hockey, as we all know, is not exactly a sport that's accessible to everybody because you have to have ice, you have to have equipment, you have to rent the ice, you have to be able to get there. And so I had to wait till I was 16 before I could really play any organized hockey. We used to play on the ponds a little bit for a couple of weeks whenever we had ice, but...
it's much easier if you're in Canada, one of the provinces.
Well, Connecticut does have its winter, but it's not like the Canadian winter, if you know what I'm saying. So what ended up happening was I started playing the game in high school. I realized that I couldn't be close to the sport that I love and to an art form that I love.
Let's talk about that a little bit, because some people have compared what you do on the air to Van Gogh. I think I'm saying the name correctly. Too many people say Van Gogh, but I think it is Van Gogh. And they also go into details about how, well, you've actually talked about that. You used to listen to Marv Albert, and you think about it like making a painting, right? Creating a painting?
Well, there's no doubt about it, except it's a collaborative painting, because what has to happen is I have to provide the tools for which the listener takes those tools and finishes the painting with the picture in his or her mind. And, you know, you're doing that as well in every aspect of radio. But, of course, in live play-by-play coverage, you're telling a story and you're doing it with a deadline that is immediate. Your deadline is now, and you have to put together the editing, and you have to put together the writing, and you have to put together the performance side of it, all of that into that immediate deadline, which is a great challenge and something I really enjoy.
No net, and we have no editors.
No, I have editors,
but I mean in terms of editing the actual broadcast that you do, it's out there, it's live, and it's in the moment, and that is exciting.
Yeah, and the show must go on, as it were, because, you know, you'll have your moments when things don't go exactly as you expect, and so, therefore, you have to push forward, and that's an interesting experience as well.
Yeah, we could probably share horror stories along those lines of foot and mouth.
Favorite one is once early in my career, I had my mouth got stuck. You know, that happens once in a while, just, you know, gets stuck. And I had trouble saying that somebody had trouble getting the puck out of the zone. I said something else, which was rather interesting.
Yeah, well, I had a similar experience. We won't go into that anecdote, though. People
always fun.
May remember it. You are also somebody who gets very excited by, I mean, it comes across the enthusiasm, the energy and everything. What is it? I was talking a little bit about this with Danny Bringer. What is it about hockey that excites you?
Well, I think it's the ultimate team sport, first of all, but it's an ultimate drama. It's a drama between what some people regard as good and evil, depending on what team they're rooting for, but also about a great goal of winning the Stanley Cup, which I think is the hardest trophy to win of all the major sports.
That's your lifetime dream?
It would be amazing to see the Sharks win the Stanley Cup and to bring that to San Jose. It would mean so much more than just a sports trophy. It would be an achievement for a community. And that's something we have to remember. Wherever we travel, we're representing our city.
Well, tell a story about you in San Jose, because you had a near-fatal accident, a car accident, and really quite moving. You came back, fortunately, made it through, back in life and all that. I mean, I know it was actually a near-death experience. And the fans showed such appreciation for you. It was one of those moments where you realize, this is where I belong. These are my people. These are my fans. That's very moving.
It really was. And I'll tell you, I can't tell you how much that helped me recover quickly, because I got at least 40 feet of people who signed well wishes for me. And I still have that at my house. And, we'll pull it out every once in a while and just take a look at some of the messages. They were so heartfelt. And these are people that are so passionate about the game, and they're proud about where they live. And, you know, that being the whole Bay Area, really. We have fans all over the Bay Area. So people from everywhere, from San Francisco to Walnut Creek to San Jose to Gilroy were involved in signing that, and were Sharks fans. So to me, that's something when you realize – this is the place I selected, and I had the opportunity to get to the NHL and pursue my dream. But it's also a place that became home, and that was a moment when it really was full force for me that it was my home.
Still a lot of competition between San Francisco and San Jose to claim the mantle, whatever it is, where sports teams are concerned. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that because I think it's part of a larger picture, right? I think if you're from the San Jose point of view, there's a bit of a, I guess you could say, an arched back a little bit about that. I always remember the old story where we would hear folks from San Francisco at times in the early days say, you know, we really should come to San Jose more often because it's a nice place, but it was kind of a backhanded feel about how they said that. I think that's overstated. I think that the two areas are beautiful areas to live, the best place in the world to live.
Except very expensive in both cases.
Yeah, that's the only drawback, really, is the cost of living. But the actual elements that are at your disposal, whether it's great universities, whether it's art museums, whether it's restaurants, whether it's beautiful geography, you know, like we have in San Francisco with the Golden Gate Bridge. San Jose doesn't have that, but it has so many other things. Silicon Valley, the economic center of the world, is basically right in the San Jose region. So we have all of that to share with each other. And I think instead of having a rivalry over it, we can have a good-natured one. But I think we realize that, for instance, 49er fans, all the years at Candlestick Park, or Giants fans at Candlestick or at the current facility, I think many of those fans come from the South Bay, and they come from other parts of the Bay Area. So it's not only one city that represents it. And I think that San Jose, being a larger city these days, has gained in prominence. And I don't think it's so much of a rivalry. I think it's something where we need to share in that bounty together.
Dan Rozanowski is with us. He's the author of If These Walls Could Talk, stories from the San Jose Sharks ice locker and press rooms. And he's the kind of guy who actually goes in and talks to the players even during practice and gets as much as he can. And Let's hear a little bit more of Dan's play-by-play. Here's the 2010 playoffs against Detroit.
Sharks have a 2-on-1 if they hurry. It's Thornton moving up ice with Marlowe. Thornton to Marlowe shoots. He scores! He scores! Patrick Marlowe in his 100th career playoff game gets the game winner for the Sharks at 7:07.
You are really into it.
Yeah, that was a fun moment. That was a game in Detroit against the Red Wings. That was a longtime nemesis of the Sharks, of course. And
wait, Danny's got the microphone open. Wasn't that the moment you were talking about, Dan?
No, I was talking about the earlier moment. When was that, Dan? The first time when the Sharks played Detroit and ended up beating them. Do you remember when that was, in the 90s?
Oh, that would have been 1994. That was Jamie Baker scoring against Chris Osgood in
Game
7.
Yeah, that's the one
seven.
I was thinking about.
And I have to tell you, that's really the moment that sealed the deal for the Sharks in San Jose, because the year before, the 2 years they played at the Cal Palace were rough years on the ice. I remember one game where I called the action. I was doing the game alone at the time, and the score was 1-0 Sharks very early in the game. The team had been having a rough year, and the coach had said, listen, let's forget about the year. Let's have a couple of good practices. Let's go to Calgary and Edmonton and have a good rest of the season and forget about the record. So they were up 1-0, and the final score was 13-1 Calgary. I remember calling a game like that, but this next year that Danny's talking about, the Sharks beat Detroit in Game 7. Jamie Baker picked up the game-winning goal. He's now one of my broadcast partners, so we get to relive that every time we go to Detroit. But that was the moment that SAP Center, as it's now known, had just opened, and so the Sharks had the greatest single-season turnaround in the history of the game, qualified for the playoffs, had that moment against the best team in hockey, and shocked the hockey world. And I'll always remember Coach Kevin Constantine coming out and saying to his players before that game, we told you were going to shock the hockey world. Now what I want you to do is I want you to remember somebody that helped you get to this moment in your life. And I want you to take this puck that I'm going to give you right now, and I want you to sign it, and I want you to, after you shock the hockey world tonight, I want you to give it to that person, because this is going to be a moment you're never going to forget. And that's how the city of San Jose reacted to it, because it was the first season, and so many amazing things have happened since then.
Well, you mentioned Calgary. They've still got, obviously, a shot at the Pacific Division, and they're going to play the final season game with Calgary, on March 31st, I believe. Chances this year for championship?
Here's my feeling. I really believe this, that this team is a better team than the team that went to the Stanley Cup final in 2016 against Pittsburgh. I really think it's a better team. And I think it's
because of Pavlevsky?
Well, he was on the team too, but because of the depth on defense and the players. You know, hockey is what we call a weak link sport in a way. And that is, you're only as good as your weakest player. The opposite may be true for a sport like basketball. We were just talking about this morning, where one player can absolutely dominate the court. And so, as we've seen with the Warriors doing that, that does happen. But hockey is a real sport of accountability. And so these players, these role players, are so important. Yeah, the superstars like Pavelski and Thornton and Couture and Brent Burns and Erik Karlsson are important.
But you thinking Curry dominates with the Warriors because Kevin Durant dominates as much?
Well, no, they have superstar players, right? Yeah. But you don't get that far if you don't have a bunch of role players, right? So that you have to have those grinders, those guys that play an honest brand of hockey, that make things difficult for the other team. Because of the grueling nature of the sport, you know, we're traveling, we're going through different time zones, there are three games in four nights, and that doesn't happen as much in the playoffs, but oftentimes you'll see the teams that win the Stanley Cup, they all have great players, all of them have star players, but the one thing that makes the difference are those role players during the course of the playoffs, and so you'll talk about a third or fourth line guy or the last guy on the roster scoring a big winning goal. A good example of that first goal in Sharks playoff history was scored by Sean Cronin, a guy who was known more for taking penalties and making life difficult physically for the opponents, but yet he scores this big goal in a big, big game. And that happens so often in the sport of hockey.
A lot of people who want to talk about their favorite Shark moments, but since you touched upon the violence in the game, it's often brought up about hockey. What do you say?
I'd say it's overrated when you talk about it that way. I think that goes back to the 1970s when fighting, as it were, became a strategy. I would say that in the last 10 years, there have been more bench-clearing brawls in Major League Baseball than there have been in hockey. And that is an interesting concept to consider. But the other flip side of that is, yes, there is fighting in hockey. There is a penalty for it. However, they feel that the example of dropping your weapon, which is your stick, is a good example. And standing up for the honor of your team when the policeman can't see you is also something that is part of the culture of the game. So I'd say that the actual number of fights has really declined in the last few years because the emphasis has been on skill, speed, tenacity, and yes, good, clean, hard body checking. But the game has changed since those days.
Yeah, speaking about hockey sticks, there's a story. I'll just speak about it here in a way to maybe whet people's appetites and interests. About Al Afraidy, he was sitting with a hockey stick. This was in Dallas, right? Big Al was sitting there, and he's actually smoking with nothing on except what nature provided. And this is a blowtorch he's using to light his cigarettes with a hockey stick, and, well, you can take it from there.
Well, yeah, that was
play-by-play.
That was at Reunion Arena, which was, of course, an older facility. They play in American Airlines Center now. So all of the newer buildings have thought about all of these contingencies and designing where they're going to put the locker rooms. But in the older buildings, especially one that was more designed for basketball and not for hockey, they didn't have that well thought out. And so the locker room for the Sharks, the visiting teams in Reunion Arena, was in a corridor. And they did all their stick work was out in that corridor. And if you looked right down the hallway, there was a wide open door, and it was exactly where fans were walking into the building. So Big Al is sitting in there, and he was one of the few players that did smoke. So he was having a cigarette. And the blowtorch you describe is the blowtorch they use to actually cure their sticks. They change the curve of their sticks, and they use a blowtorch to help bend it. And work with a carbon fiber material too, and so Al was there, lights up the cigarette with his blowtorch, and suddenly the security guard comes looking very concerned because the doors had been open and all the fans were rushing in. They looking down the hallway and seeing Al standing there naked, and she rushes up to him and she says, "Sir," and he looks at her quizzically and she says, "There's no smoking in the arena." So being naked was fine, but no smoking, well, that was absolutely out.
Well, here's some comments coming in. Let me read a few of them. Deanna says, "I've been a Sharks fan since the inception. All I wanted for my birthday when I turned 12 was a Sharks jersey and starter jacket saying hashtag I bleed teal." Another listener writes, "Sharks best moment, 1993. Makarov scores a hat trick on a penalty shot. I was hoarse for days."
That was awesome.
Kareen says, "Also, 19-year-old Tomas Hertl's debut in 2013 against the New York Rangers where he got four goals was amazing." Getting those kind of moments, let's get a call on. Francesca, you're on. Morning.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Good morning, everybody. I have been a Sharks fan since day one. I was introduced to hockey by my dad, who was a Rangers fan, saw them win the Stanley Cup in 1940. We've been Sharks Pax holders for 19 years. My kids have been going since they were little. I wanted to just say that, Dan, you and Jamie and Brent and Randy are the premier broadcasters in this sport, in my opinion. You do a fantastic job of calling the games. We always listen to the post-game show when we're in our car heading back from a game. The Sharks organization is a class organization. They do so much community outreach to bring new kids from all different groups into hockey to enjoy the sport, boys and girls. I can't say enough about the team. We were at the game against the Blackhawks on Sunday night. That was a good game. And I agree with you. I think the team this year is better than the 2016-17 team. You know, we're missing some of our players, but they're going to be back. Joe's looking great. And I just wanted to say my most memorable moment, there have been so many in hockey, is in 2010 at Fan Appreciation Night, which was the last game of the regular season. I got one of the lucky tickets, and I won the right to go down on the ice, and I got Nabby's jersey and shook his hand. And of course, Joe Thornton was number 19, so it was right between him and Nabokov. And I wear that jersey to all the games.
That's fantastic, Francesca.
Yeah, you Francesca, know, good to hear from you.
And we've got a lot in common, too, you know, because I grew up listening to Marv Albert call Rangers games, and I used to integrate with a whole bunch of people that were back from those 1940s and 50s years.
How'd you feel when he went through that ignominy?
Well, it was tough.
It's a big scandal.
Yeah, it's difficult. You know, when things like that jump up into the public, It is tough.
Another caller joining us. Chris, you're on. Morning.
Good morning. When I think of Dan's book and If These Walls Could Talk, I haven't read it yet, but assuming that there must be a bit of a nod to the early days of the Cow Palace, Dan, you and I worked together the first 2 years. I was working in game operations, and if there was ever an arena that was not built for hockey, it would be the Cow Palace. I mean, from the smallest venue in professional sports to the temperature of the ice to one of the things I just said to the engineer was my memory. I did the game day operations and operated the music. They placed us in the middle of the crowd where we had to spin the CDs between intermissions, and fans felt compelled to be able to walk right up to you and tell you that the music sucked or that we need to play a certain song. And
we got
to
play a certain song here, Chris. I'm sorry, we're flat out of time about.
Yeah, but Chris, and now we have the internet for all of that these days.
That's right.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, great memories.
And great of you to call, Chris. I'm sorry, we're coming up. I just got to ask you, though, before we say goodbye. And again, Dan Rozenkowski with us here is the author of If These Walls Could Talk. Stanley Cup, Alan wants to know, why is it so much more difficult to win as opposed to MLB or NBA? We could do a whole hour on that probably, but what comes off the top of your head?
Four rounds, best of seven, physical play, travel against the best athletes in the world. It is grueling, and it's after an 82-game grueling season. The physical part of it, it's just very, very taxing, but mentally, it's even more taxing.
And one more quick favorite moment from Kevin. I was at the Tank for Game 6 against the Blues where the Sharks qualified for the Cup Final, and I still get goosebumps thinking about it. There were so many tears of joy in the stands, including my own. It was just amazing.
That's a moment I'll never forget, and Sharks fans won't either, but as I always say, the best moment in Sharks history is yet to come, and we're looking forward to that. And hope everybody reads the book. I'd like to add that my favorite chapter...
Good luck, Sharks. We're out of time.
Is the last one.